I feel like getting in a van and driving around North America and going to hospitals and saying, hey, do what we do because it's been proven, it's repeatable, we've lived this for years, it's no longer theoretical, we know that we're getting good results. The same reason airplanes stay in the sky and don't fall out, where you can order something at your local hamburger stand and half the time it's wrong. We don't have half the time it's wrong because of Six Sigma and very controlled structures. And that's that airplane level of controls that we want to have in the hospital. Machine-managed controls that liberate us from the responsibility of trying to do something that truly a machine can do better.
Every day, they slay the dragons of healthcare-acquired infections and dangerous microbial fire breathers. While you may not see them during your next hospital stay, they will be there, ensuring the safest possible surgeries by skillfully wielding their disinfecting weapons of mass microbial destruction. They are sterile processing professionals, and this is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the global sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we introduce you to the unsung heroes who are fighting dirty around the globe. And now, it's time to go Beyond Clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Charlie Webb, founder and president of Vanderstahl Scientific. Charlie manages the company's new technology development through the company's vendor partners. Charlie is a certified packaging professional, CPP, certified through the Institute of Packaging Professionals, as well as a Six Sigma Master Black Belt. Charlie has been in sterile device packaging for 25 years and has been involved in numerous FDA and ISO audits as a regulatory advisor. As a member of a scientific review board, he co-developed microsurgical devices that broke away from the conservative change models. He is also the quality manager for Vanderstahl Scientific's demanding ISO IEC 17025 accreditation. He continues to grow his company's new product development program with the aim of reaching more users of their equipment in order to better manage healthcare packaging failures. His company and laboratory client list includes NASA and the CDC, Center for Disease Control. One of his current patent-pending products in development is the HTIP system, which is the human tissue isolation pouch that is designed to help avoid packaging machine contamination. The seal-through HTIP system isolates the donor tissue packaging process to help thwart cross-contamination between donor events. This system will greatly help prevent machine contamination and increases packaging machine component life cycles, saving money while managing infection risk to donor recipients. He is also working on a medical device tray sealer that will integrate pouch testing within the packaging machine to provide 100% real-time seal testing. This patent-pending device hopes to revolutionize the way medical devices are packaged by assuring the tray has a solid seal and that the medical device sterility is intact. So, Mike, this is going to be a really interesting episode today with Charlie Webb. I know everybody's familiar with this type of packaging on the front lines. They're out there on the front lines out there in sterile processing, but I don't think people really know what's going on the manufacturer side. And Charlie's going to kind of give us a little bit of an inside look into his world.
You know, Justin, at the Isham National show this past month or two ago, there was one theme that kept coming up in some of the vendors that we talked to, and that was how much sterile processing could benefit from reaching across and really examining some of the processes that are already in place on the manufacturer side. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing things from the manufacturer side, especially when we talk about things like package validation, and consistency, quality controls, and seeing how those things are beginning to move into the frontline SPD world.
Yeah, I know validation will be a big point of conversation during this interview.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. Are you ready for AIMI ST-108 released in 2023? Evoqua Water Technologies can help you prepare. Our water experts participated in the development of the new standard and understand the impact medical device reprocessing has on patient safety. Evoqua offers water purification systems specifically designed to help sterile processing departments meet the critical water requirements and strict standards of AIMI ST-108. With locations across the United States, we stand by ready to help you with your sterile processing water needs so you can focus on your core priority, patient safety. Contact Evoqua today for a site audit and ST-108 guidance. Visit www.evoqua.com/beyondclean to learn more. That's EVOQUA.com/beyondclean.
Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Charlie Webb, founder and president of Vanderstahl Scientific. And we're going to talk about, well, I love the title of this one, Sealed and Delivered, What You Didn't Know About Medical Device Packaging. So, Charlie, you got probably one of the best titles that we've had in quite a while, and we're really excited to have you on to talk about medical device packaging today.
It's terrific to be here. I binge listened to about six of your episodes today, so your voices are very familiar in my ear right now. Great program, and thanks, guys, for bringing such a amazing podcast. I really enjoy it.
It really is a labor of love, and you must have enjoyed it if you listened to six of them in a row. Let's set the context for medical device packaging and talk about where and how it's done.
Well, on the industrial side where I reside, we have validation as sort of the panacea for where we live. So medical devices that are new products that are packaged in a clean room are covered through the ISO 11607 mandate. And that mandate, also known as packaging for terminally sterilized medical devices, is sort of the anthem, the theme, the guidelines that we use following what's known as the IQOQPQ. So we have very strict codified systems that we follow. For instance, a packaging machine in our industry has to manage temperature. It has to manage force that's being applied to the pouch during sealing. And it has to manage dwell or time or conveyance speed. So we have a lot of controls that we have to manage on our side because we have the shipping aspect of a medical device on the medical device manufacturing side. So that device has to be looked at in terms of transportation challenges and atmospheric changes and other change factors that have to be accounted for. So it's a little different from the hospital where it goes upstairs. We're going many times across country, sometimes around the world, and that's a lot of times where we're challenged on our side of packaging.
Now, Charlie, can you talk a little bit more just to kind of orient our audience? So I know it's industrial packaging, but in terms of where actually these facilities would be located, are they centrally located in medical centers? Does it matter? Is it just off-site where there's plenty of room to build in all the workflow and machinery? What's the thought behind how they're located?
Well, we're the medical device manufacturers are spread throughout the United States, and you can see corridors of medical devices. We're manufacturers. We're in Southern California, and in the San Diego area, there's groups of life science companies and medical device manufacturers. And we're, our connection to hospitals or where the end users are going to be using the devices is really not a concern, since we're using all the different layers of shipping modalities. And so these devices are typically connected with the manufacturing of the device. So if it's a disposable scalper, for instance, that's injection molded, the piece is put on, it moves into packaging, goes into a class 100,000 clean room. Operators do final assembly, they do packaging. It's typically put into a chipboard box that's sent out to sterilization, either ETO or gamma radiation at a central radiator, and then those are sent off to distribution. So the chain of where these are located are disconnected from healthcare facilities, which, you know, makes it a challenge at times because the companies and the workers are really sort of firewalled. It's opaque to the end destination. But we are typically clustered in several parts of the United States. Near Chicago and Southern California are the main medical device manufacturing corridors in the U.S.
Now, you've mentioned a couple of the materials that are used and a few of the machinery. Can you go into a little more detail and maybe even contrast the types of materials and the types of machinery that we may use on the hospital setting side of packaging as compared to what it looks like on the industrial side?
Sure. So a lot of times in the hospital SPD groups, we'll be using simple machines. They're just simple heat sealers. They're not microprocessor controlled. Oftentimes, some hospitals have moved up to a little higher technology, but usually these are simple packaging machines that don't have a lot of logic built into them. For medical device manufacturers, because we're under that ISO 11.6.0 mandate, most medical device companies are 13.45 ISO companies, and so it's very codified, very specific on how that device is going to get packaged. So as a result of that, we have to have machinery that is smart. Sometimes these are enterprise systems that integrate through Ethernet into the medical device manufacturer, because as you know, and everywhere in healthcare, everything is about traceability. So we're using machinery that is far more advanced than the hospital would use it. Some of it has to do with budget at the hospital. A lot of times we're hoping to break the boundary is the education of why would you use a control system, OEM system, when you're only a hospital. But now we're seeing some of our customers that are looking for machinery that is more advanced because they're concerned about the human connection. A lot of the seal failures that happen tend to be a human condition opposed to a machine failure. So the goal is to remove out the human fault and to go more into machine logics, at least on our end of the business.
So Charlie, you've already mentioned one thing that I kind of want to back up and talk about quickly is the challenge that comes along with being so far removed from the patient. And so you have a very patient-centric business, but you never see the patients who are the end users or the end recipients, I should say, of your product. So how does your business, you know, manage to maintain that patient-centric focus?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's one of the challenges. I think you see it a little bit even in the hospital. I mean, the SPDs are famously downstairs and tend to be disconnected, but they're at a healthcare facility. They drive past red crosses attached to buildings and those sort of things. In medical device packaging at the device company, they're completely disconnected. And then hospital, in some cases, could be 100 miles away. So it's challenging for medical device manufacturers to be able to connect the dots. And, you know, now we're talking about new metrics like patient outcome metrics and those sort of things. Like, how does what I'm doing in this clean room in Nebraska going to affect a stent recipient in Los Angeles in a week? And it's a difficult story to tell, and I believe it's a human resource problem for medical device manufacturers, because their goal is to be able to understand the connectivity between all aspects of their mission in that clean room. And I've, over the last 25 years, I've been in hundreds of clean rooms, and you really don't feel like you're connected to a healthcare facility. You feel like you're very much in a, although a very controlled environment, it feels like manufacturing. And I think that's going to be a challenge as we get tighter controls for the medical device manufacturers to better connect employees, even management core, to feel more connected to the patient, especially, again, as we're moving into these procedure outcomes, risk-to-patient metrics. We want to be able to connect everyone in. That's why I see, I'm no futurist, but I do feel that there's going to be a melding at one point between the hospitals and medical device manufacturers, where there's going to be more of a unification of how things are packaged moving forward, I believe.
Yeah, that'd be great to see. And as you're talking about the remote separation of the plant, obviously, and the workers inside, you alluded to it earlier, if it's so far away from the end user, and the question is, how are these packages, you know, getting from point A to point B? And of course, in our setting, with all of the transportation controls, the sterile storage requirements, I know there's always a lot of questions for how and why we treat industrial packaging differently than we may our own packages that we've processed in the hospital. So just for our audience sake, what does it look like when these packages are leaving the plant? What's that transportation flow? What are the controls related to that to the point that it gets to the end user?
Sure. So the typical sort of vanilla package for a medical device is a 1073 Tyvac to clear fill. So it's a Tyvac pouch with a chevron end. I'm sure you've seen many of these in the disposable side, and they're designed to be able to have to be delivered at the point of care with gloved hands. And so it's the standard vanilla pouch. And those pouches of variety of sizes and configuration of devices are put into a chipboard box. Those are put into a corrugated box. And then typically they go to the sterilizer from that point. Oftentimes it's gamma radiation. They're put into pallets. They're run through the radiation process. And those are put into standard distribution, either through a common truck or, in some cases, for the smaller devices, they're going out on a UPS truck, and those are being sterilized at the hospital. I think when on the hospital side, when you see these arrive, again, I think there's a little bit of a disconnect about what the sterilization process has been, and that's another problem that we're beginning to see. Some of the devices come, and they're not sterilized. They have to be sterilized at the hospital. Because, I mean, I speak with so many device companies that are, for instance, through BA orthopedic part, and the part is packaged, but the sterilization has to be explained into a category number when it gets to the point of care. So it's becoming so complicated, and there's so many medical device companies, small, medium-sized devices that are using, that have complicated material, they're using complicated packaging and inserts and trays, that we just keep on adding these SKUs in, and every year there's more and more SKUs that are being added into the distribution chain. And so that's sort of what prompted us to look into the completeness of device manufacture to the patient. And it's a murky water in between that device being made and to the patient oftentimes, at least from our point of view. I think one thing that we see on our end there is because we're under so many controls when it comes to package, because we're up to the scrutiny of the risk of that device being damaged in transit, and if that device gets damaged, it can risk the efficacy. Further, if the sterility is lost, then it becomes effectively a poisonous device. So the things that we are doing on our end feel so high level to us. I hope that doesn't sound too smug, but when I compare and contrast to some facilities versus OEM processes and controls, gosh, it's night and day, very different between the two sort of value systems from our point of view.
Charlie, we've had several guests on the show talk about validation of the actual devices, but we haven't had anybody tell us about how validation is done for the packaging. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. So validation basically is a process where you do you make a purchase specification for a piece of machinery that's going to close the bag. You do a design of experiments. So you're looking at challenges of how to determine that this pouch is going to seal and be repeatability. Repeatability is everything with us. And that's why machines have to be more advanced on a validated process. So we validate the equipment. The equipment has to be calibrated by an accredited laboratory like ours. It has to meet the requirements of ISO. So you're starting out with a machine that has to be sort of certified and approved. Then you're working with workers that have to be certified and approved. You're working with material that has to be certified and approved. So every aspect of everything that touches that pouch, you know, now the FDA looks at the medical device as an aggregate. The medical device is, the pouch is actually, I believe it's a class one device now. So we talk, the language in our industry is the sterile barrier system. So the sterile barrier system is the complete container closure system that cradles, protects, and preserves sterility to the point of use. And in order to make sure that all of the spokes, and there's very many spokes, that all of those are together, you have to validate the process. And so you have to, every piece of that has to be vetted and watched. Our machines, for instance, if a machine drops 2% of its temperature, it alarms and stops and won't even allow the operator to continue to feed. Those are those alarm level, firewall level of machine functionality that are required in order to validate the process. So you can see on the OEM side, it's serious business. I'm not saying that it isn't in the SPD, but on our end, it has to be very provable science. In fact, most of the packaging engineers are statisticians. They're working in probability indexes and those sort of metrics. So they know for sure that their device is going to make it to the hospital and ultimately into the surgical suite intact and sterile. And that's basically what we're looking at with validation, a very vetted, alarmed process.
So kind of connected to that, one of the questions that came up very frequently when I was training our technicians how to restock certain carts where we had to handle a lot of the, you know, manufacturer sealed products, was that some manufacturer sealed products have expiration dates and some do not, which is different than SPD. What is the difference between those that have expiration dates and those that for some reason do not have expiration dates?
Yeah, typically for medical disposable medical devices, there is an expiry dating, and that falls under the material. They're making those decisions based on the material and also aging studies. Many labs perform accelerated aging, and they can sort of look at what the life cycle is. I think probably referring to is that we do see, and usually it's more focused towards the hospital where they're doing event dating, where they're saying that if it isn't being used and no change has taken place, then the device by virtue of its static condition doesn't require expiration dating. But we, on our side of the fence in medical device manufacturing, almost always we're required the coding to have the lot number, the date of manufacturing, expiry dating, and then typically some other unique code. We're moving into a UDI coding requirement now. So again, we're trying, traceability is becoming thicker as we move into the coming years. But sometimes device makers will also sell, as I mentioned before, a device that will be sterilized, autoclaved or other modality at the point of use. But typically for our business, you'll just about always open up that chipboard box and you'll see on the non-sterile side of the seal expiry dating.
Charlie, I think you might have already alluded to some of the answer of the question I'm about to ask, but essentially you're describing validation, and then Mike asked a question about expiration. But how does the validation, and you said validating the process, but you really talked about validating the process, you know, internally to where they're being peel packed. How does it ensure validation and that the packages remain sterile when they are being shipped and delivered to the customer?
Well, again, I think most of that falls under that sort of theoretical science. So we can look at, again, using design of experiments and by using models that sort of synthesize the condition through accelerated aging, we have a pretty fair idea that if we have machines that are controlling the process, if operators are trained and following a codified system, and all of these ifs sort of line up through validation, then we have a known percentile of error, you know, following in a Six Sigma model where we know that if these connections are made, then we can apply some math to determine what our risks to the process are. And risk to process has really entered into the sort of nomenclature recently as we move into changes in terms of how laboratories, how medical devices companies, and how even hospitals look at processes, where before validation meant that we were trying to do our best to see that it's going to make it to the point. Now we're looking at a more patient-centric vista, and we're saying that how can we develop a process where we're looking at that humanoid connection, and how would that change the way that we develop our systems? And so there's a little bit of psychodynamics in there where we actually are changing our thinking on the device side to really put us into that patient outcome, not only financial metric, but of course the humanistic metric as well.
So you described it in the manufacturing process. You described it in the transport process. Now it hits the customer and they put it on the racks and they stuff them in little bins and they overstuff them in the racks. And, you know, obviously that's not best practice. Obviously, if the package has been crushed, et cetera, all the guidelines around that. But really at that point, it's on the customer, right? You're saying, here's best practices. This is how you're supposed to take care of this when it's delivered. And if you don't, it could definitely compromise sterility, correct?
That's right. And I think, you know, it's a very good point. I mean, we're always challenged with every step of the process, and distribution is challenging. You know, we've noticed overland carriers have become much more rough with the way they handle material, and so we have changed the way we package machinery at my company to sort of buffer that human dynamic that is always hard to predict. It's difficult to predict what might happen to it. So when device makers are developing a product inside of a pouch, they have to look at, you know, what material might chafe and transport. So a lot of the materials that you might see on disposable pouches are a material that is a multi-extruded, bi-extruded material that will tolerate the rubbing in transit. We also have, of course, like you would use there, we have disposable tip protectors on devices. We have chipboard inserts to cradle and hold devices in place. And then, of course, with all of that, again, we do accelerated aging, shaker tables, all of those sort of things that you would do with any product, of course, squared. It's because these are critical, and a lot of time pinholes are very difficult to see on medical pouches, and sterility loss can come on what looks like a good seal oftentimes. There can be a failure. Now we're starting to see SPD starting to use ink dye tests, which using the ASTM 1929 guideline. And we think that's a really good first step. Testing is going to be so important. And we talked a little bit about validation and packaging challenge, both destructive and non-destructive testing on medical device pouches is so valuable. We do it on the OEM side, and we're really hoping to see much more of that at the hospital.
And Charlie, you used the term extruded, but just to make sure everybody who's listening knows what that means, can you kind of give a definition for extruded?
So these are typically a die that will pull out multi-levels of material and push it through a die and create several layers of material to create more of a robust end product.
So you mentioned as well the movement toward those dye tests in the healthcare setting, or in the hospital setting, I should say. And I know for folks who have been to the ISHM conferences over the last couple of years, they may have seen those dye tests. But I know the majority of our listeners probably have not made it to those conferences themselves. So what would be the purpose, again, for using a dye test? And are there any recommendations or standards out there right now that would encourage or direct that type of quality testing?
Certainly. I mean, I think if it's one of the best things we can do is test. I mean, if you look at going back a million years, if you're hitting a rock, a piece of flint, the caveman's looking at the arrow tip to make sure it's sharp. Visual inspection is important. There's even an ASTM standard for visual inspection. It's the 1886. But there's the ASTM 1929 is the dye test. And there's products in the market is a little pouch full of a specific ink. It has a certain amount of surfactant in it. The ink is a very specific darkness too. And it has the chemical properties to absorb or not to absorb at a certain rate. And you simply drop this pouch inside a bag. You seal it up as you normally would. You push on the pouch, it releases the ink within the pouch, and then you can turn it on all four sides, and you can look for, number one, gross leakers to see if there's some sort of an occlusion on the side where it's leaking, or you can see for more hidden issues like narrow seals that will hold a certain amount of strength and be a sterile barrier. If it's a 10-millimeter wide seal and through some damage because of the packaging equipment has cut that in half, you're 50% less of a sterile barrier. So dye penetration is easy to in-service staff. It's an inexpensive system. You can do it occasionally, once a day, once a week, and you can just start by using that in a simple log. It's remedial, it's 101, but it's a first step in package testing, and it's a great way to be able to discover if there, for instance, if the heating element on a sealer had a little bit of a bump or a bruise or something on it, you would not be able to visually see that. So as you're packaging throughout the day, you're a stamping process. So you're milling out all these bad seals, and so you couldn't see them. They're invisible. If you look at the naked eye, there's very little that you could determine. But with the dye penetration, you could see perhaps a fissure, a hairline fissure. That leaker is enough to create a sterility loss in a sick patient.
Yeah, it's so interesting because you're able to test multiple variables. You're testing the equipment, you're testing your packaging, you're even testing users if it's a manual seal process. And as you said, if you're not testing, then who knows if there's a breakdown in any of those variables, right? I was thinking as you were speaking, if we're discussing human elements, there's probably no more human interaction with medical device packaging and the self-seal pill pouches that we see in the industry today. Are we moving toward those, away from those? Everything that we've heard on this interview, you know, seems to be heading more toward a standard automation of the process and away from that type of material. You know, how should our audience think about that particular type of packaging?
You know, because of the nature of my business, it's probably a bit like asking a barber if you need a haircut. I have a very specific opinion, but I would say that, you know, in general, because on the industrial side anyway, that we have to control all affected attributes. So we have to control temperature, pressure, and time. So when you try to have a human replicate something and make it repeatable, that's the reason that we moved into mechanism or agrarian mechanism long ago. Machines can just simply do things better than we can. And the machine is going to run that material through. It's going to measure temperature plus or minus 2%. It's going to measure force in newtons plus or minus 2%. It's going to convey that material through the heated dyes plus or minus 2%. That would be very difficult for a human to do, even the most alert human. So self-sealing pouches are just simply not used in our world. You couldn't validate them because it doesn't meet the mandates under the Part 2 of ISO 11607, whereas we have to control and monitor critical packaging attributes. And so that's why I believe we're going to see more smarter equipment coming into the hospital to match the mission that we have on the OEM side. We've been at this longer because the requirements are more codified and universal over our industry. So we think that really I feel like getting in a van and driving around North America and going to hospitals and saying, hey, do what we do because it's been proven, it's repeatable, we've lived this for years, it's no longer theoretical, we know that we're getting good results. It's the same reason airplanes stay in the sky and don't fall out, where you can order something at your local hamburger stand and half the time it's wrong. We don't have half the time it's wrong because of Six Sigma structures and very controlled structures. And that's that level, airplane level of controls that we want to have in the hospital. Those machine managed controls that liberate us from the responsibility of trying to do something that truly a machine can do better. And gosh, you know, we are so far behind it. We have so much technology now that can do so many things. I'm quite shocked often to see how primitive a lot of the packaging systems are at that level, at the hospital level, because I have lived in this controlled world for so long. It's quite surprising that more of it hasn't spilled south of where we are.
Well, it certainly sounds like the next step is to take it there. And I got to tell you, this was a fantastic interview. It went by very quickly for us, Charlie, and you did a very nice job of, I think everybody likes to hear what's going on the manufacturer side. We've had several other interviews, and I remember one regarding ChemDAC, and they were testing hydrogen peroxide, and we heard that a lot of manufacturers are doing that when they're actually building the machines, but we don't see it necessarily out there in the field with the frontline technicians. And this is kind of another similar thing where we have this technology and the manufacturers are using, but it's not always out there, again, with the technicians and out there in the sterile processing department. So it's great to hear what you're doing. It has to be on the horizon for the people that are listening to this episode that are out there working as sterile processing professionals. So thank you so much for sharing that today and all of your knowledge.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for including me.
That was Charlie Webb, founder and president of Vanderstahl Scientific. And we talked about medical device packaging today, Hank. Some really great, not only just points that he made, but I think he illuminated it pretty well. And especially towards the end of the interview, he talks about how much technology really needs to come to the forefront in our industry to help reduce human error and do some of the things that technology does best, like we see in other industries. And I'm going to quote our chief medical officer, Peter Nickel, on this one. It's a high stress and highly technical profession, and all the other ones have the technology to help them do an even better job. And he talks about how much that technology is available on the manufacturer side, but we really need to get this to the frontline technicians out there in the sterile processing world.
What a great episode to kick off this new season of Beyond Clean. And it's just a great reminder, you know, guys like Charlie Webb are out there with tremendous experience and expertise, and they got a great story to tell to educate all the rest of us on what's going on, you know, behind the scenes for this great topic of medical device packaging. And who would have thought that you can tune into a podcast and get this content, you know, delivered to you on your drive into work or, you know, during your shift in decontamination. Like, what a cool time to be alive, and what a great project to be a part of with Beyond Clean. And again, the beauty in all of this is that we get to find the folks who have the stories and give them a platform. And yeah, this is one of those episodes that I'm just walking away from saying, wow, so much more to learn and understand. But we took some great steps today to really see behind the scenes.
You know, it's great too, because one thing we learned off the air after the interview from Charlie is that he actually has a background in radio and has started a podcast really more specific to the manufacturers that they support in the industry. But we got to hear a little bit of his podcast, and he's definitely a pro. It's no wonder he did such a great job as a guest, because he's been on the other side of the mic, as they might say. So it was great to have him. I'm sure we'll have him again on a future episode, but that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review, because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.